tell me when. Okay, we were talking about Clayton. I have a plaque in this house. It's over the mantel, and it's a memorial. It's heavy iron, I guess. I don't know what it is. That says, in memory of Clayton Bell, Cleveland Bell, in the Navy. And I've got flowers all around it. And I don't go to the cemetery much because he's not there. I don't want to think about where I am when I'm out there, because usually I'm standing on the ground above him. But, and I was going to give the scripture for this, but this is one other scripture you might look up, that to be absent in the flesh is to be present with God. And that's where he is. And he's on one side of the Gulf, it's called, in Luke. He's on the paradise side, or he's not on the paradise side. And I don't know whether I ever told you about seeing him once, but I was washing dishes, and I don't know whether there was a noise or what, but I looked quickly to the right, and there he was. And he had on a brand new pair of overalls that he hated. He hated overalls because he made me wash them first because they were so stiff and everything. And he had on a baseball cap turned backwards, and it was in orange and red plaid. And I have thought since, because I can see this image nearly any time I want to, he must have been in either his wheelchair or his power chair, because I looked straight across to him, not up or not down. And I've tried he didn't have a shirt on that I saw. But anyhow, during my last year, in 2011, I had hallucinations, and they were always of little baby squirrels or baby kittens or puppies or something like that. And it was hard for me to tell what I saw when I saw Clayton. And now I have decided that it was an hallucination. So something I'm taking is giving me hallucinations, because, well, I saw kittens last night.
You know, go back to that vision that you had of Daddy. There's a picture out here somewhere, or I have seen a picture of Nathan that he had taken with his wife and family. It was one of those studio pictures, and Nathan is dressed in overalls and no shirt. In this picture that I've seen of Nathan, and he has this driving cap on or something. But you may have seen that photograph, and maybe that's what triggered that vision that you had of Daddy, because there is a picture of Nathan in some overalls and no shirt. And I know that Nathan used to wear a hat backwards. You know, that was a fad, you know, in the last 10 years or so, people wearing a baseball cap backwards. So there's a lot of things that go into what you saw, probably.
Yeah, well, I don't know of that picture.
I thought you had it out here. I was looking around.
All my pictures are somewhere else.
Yeah, well, anyway, I just wanted to throw that in. But Daddy, I think when Daddy had his second stroke, and he was in the nursing home, he and I were alone in his room, and I asked him, I said, do you think you'll die here? And he just said, yes. And I said, well, you're ready to go? And he said, yes. And so right there we prayed, and I prayed to God that God would come and take Daddy, because he's ready to meet Jesus. And we just had a very short prayer there. And of course we know the story. Whenever he did die, I was in Arizona doing an art show. Whenever you called me, I was actually trying to park my trailer, and I couldn't park it because you were telling me such distressful news, and I didn't know what I was going to do. You said that I should come because he probably is not going to live very much longer. And some people at the show were nice enough to take me to the airport, and because I didn't have a suitcase, I had all my clothes that I had in a grocery bag. I went up to the airport, paid cash for a ticket, so I had to go through severe scrutiny. Whenever that, I had to get on the plane to come back here to go to see Daddy when he died, and then of course to his funeral. But we were, you and me and Mary were at his side, and I was on the phone with Glenda, and we were watching him die. And I was telling Glenda throughout the time his pulse and his breathing up until the time that he did die. And of course we had a wonderful funeral at Harper Tolosset, and I feel so sorry for John Ash having to lead 17 songs.
No, 12.
Oh, was it 12? I'm
just
sorry.
12.
Seemed like 17.
Yeah.
It just went on and on and on. But and we were sitting on the front row there watching John Ash go through that, and he was just sweating he was sweating profusely because he was leading all these songs. And it was just like a little singing. And
that's what we had.
And it was a good funeral. And then when we went to the graveside, you and Glenda and Mary and I sang, along with everyone else, "What a Day That Will Be." And I'll never forget, when we got towards the end of the song, there was just a look that we all looked at one another at a certain point in the end of the song, because we sang the song a little bit different than it's written. And we put that little flare in there at the graveside, and that was a great tribute to my daddy, I think.
Well, I'm glad he remembered that. I remembered something about him that I've got to tell.
Go right ahead.
Then
I didn't mean to take up all the room.
Well, I can't remember the word it was now. I'll have to wait till I can remember it before I can tell you. But he was a public speaker all through his growing up years, and in school. And I saw him. I've got to tell you this. I saw him when I was in the first or second grade, and I saw him as a little boy. And then I saw him when we met for the first time. I just saw him the first time, but I remember him. And of course we were both, I don't know what all I've told, but we were both teenagers. And we knew we loved each other then. And what were we going to get back to? Oh, do you remember the word that he was declaiming?
Disclaimer. Declaimer?
No. It wasn't that. There was a word that they booted him out.
Oh, yes.
He always was a declaimer.
Right.
And all the schools knew it, and he always won the honor of being the best. And so he went to one school, and the judges told him that they didn't like the way he said a certain word, and I can't remember the word.
You just said it. Can't.
Can't. Yes. And I don't know whether his coach told him to say can't or can't. Can't. But he said can't, and they ruled him out for that. So the next school he went to, he used the word can't, and they ruled him out there because they thought that he thought he was smart.
He told me that story.
And, yeah, it's,
and it was on his mind.
Yes,
he was in the hospital. This went through him. He resented this disqualification, and he pronounced the word that they wanted. The word that they wanted him to say was "can't," "can't," like almost C-A-H-N-T, "can't," and. That's what I remember him telling me.
Yeah.
And he was very upset with that.
Oh, he went, John and some of the guys from church, all of them, I guess, or a bunch of them, and he told it. And that was when he was supposed to have had Alzheimer's.
Yeah.
And so I said, "Do you mean that he told that story to y'all?" And they said, "Yes." And before, they had told him that he had Alzheimer's, and sometimes he would speak to me and sometimes he wouldn't speak to me, so I never knew whether it was Alzheimer's or whether he's mad about something.
Yeah.
But that was one of the stories.
Yeah, it stayed with him all of his life. He never forgot it. And of course, whenever you have Alzheimer's, you remember things that nobody remembers from way back, but you can't remember what you had for breakfast.
Yes.
So, that story, I will never forget it, because I remember hearing it from him while he was in the hospital. And it evidently affected his life very much. He said, I can remember the words he used. He says, "I can't believe that they would treat a young boy in that fashion and tell them to do something, and then they do it and tell them that it's wrong."
Mm-hmm.
That's the way he told it to me.
Yeah.
So anyway, he was, I believe I remember holding a letter, I believe it was Glenda's. Was she also into reciting things? And would she have gotten a letter, a jacket letter, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
For
she
that?
Did.
Because I remember that word on the letter, embroidered on the letter.
Yeah, she did. I don't know where it is.
Disclaimer or declaimer?
I can't remember.
It's declaimer, probably. But I believe Glenda also followed in his footsteps.
Oh, yes. She was a published poet.
Yeah?
Yes. I think I said it on when I was talking about Glenda.
Yeah.
Because she did have her poems, some of them, published. They were in a book.
Yeah.
And so we've already talked about Glenda. We've talked about Mary. We've talked about Junior. And we were talking about Daddy.
Yep.
And on a Friday, they called me at home and told me that they had just taken Clayton from the nursing home to the hospital. And so me and Mary got in the car. And we went to the hospital, and I don't know where it came from. I don't know why or anything, but we went to his bed, almost to his bed, and turned. And I said, "Honey, we're going to let you go this time." And right then, they led us to a little room. And I was looking straight at him when I told him that we were going to let him go. And we took him to a room, and immediately the minister of the Mormon, the Seventh-day Adventist Church, came to us to talk about death. And I knew he was going to die on Sunday morning, and he did. And I knew that the funeral was going to be on Tuesday. This is before he died. And I don't know how I knew it, but that's the way it turned out. And when he died, me and Clayton, like he said, me and Mary and Clayton were there. And they told us that when he started, his breaths were coming further and further apart, that the end was near. And we were there. And Junior was on the phone talking to Glenda. Glenda was out here, but she wouldn't go in. So that was Glenda's idea. She didn't want to be there. And so she wasn't. And the funeral, I think, was a big funeral. I don't know to this day. I haven't looked at the people that signed the book. I have not looked at it yet. And I don't want any part of it, of that funeral. But I have been talking, I'm going to tell you this because I'm telling Clayton Jr. Tiny calls me usually about twice a week, and he told me on the last call that I talked to him that we treated him awful at Clayton's funeral. That's what he told me. And I don't remember it. I don't remember the funeral. So I said, well, I'm sorry, that's all I can tell you. Because I didn't know that we treated anybody bad.
Well, everyone has their own perceptions, you know, and
yeah.
We weren't thinking about treating anyone anyway.
And we weren't thinking about treating him anyway, anyhow.
Yeah.
He was there. But I guess he wanted to sit with the family. That's all I can think of.
Maybe.
And I don't know where he sat.
I don't know either. I do not remember.
So that's just me and Junior talking right now.
Well, everybody hears it, so that's fine.
Well, I don't know why Tiny calls me. He said he was so lonely. He lost his wife. And he says that if he couldn't talk to me, he don't know what he would do. That I was a lifesaver because he had somebody to talk to him that wasn't mad at him. And I have been mad at him, but I didn't tell him. But this is Thursday. He didn't call yesterday, so he'll probably call today, and then usually he calls on Sunday. But it's nothing but bad conversation because he has Crohn's disease, and he's still really fat. And he can't lose it because he has no exercise. And all I hear about that Crohn's disease is awful. And I would hate to have it. And that's all I want to say about that. And, yes, I do have something else. He has been telling me things that I didn't know. Clayton was paying him a salary. I didn't know that. And I don't know why he was in Temple at the time that he was, but he said that he was at the Blue Bonnet Cafe. And somebody told him, or told Clayton, that Tiny wanted to talk to him. And Clayton went to the Blue Bonnet. And they talked, and Clayton hired him again which the word again, I didn't know whether he fired him before or what happened. But Clayton handled everything, and he handled it good. I didn't know how to write a check, hardly. And I had to learn it all, but I'm glad he was still alive while he was teaching me how to pay bills. And a little bit of how to go to the bank and what to do. And because he handled everything, everything. And he was a smart man. We'll say that again.
Yeah, and one thing that, now that I'm traveling all over the country and doing art shows, I realized that there was more to Daddy than just singing. I mean, he drove us to all of our places that we had to go. And I remember a lot of times that if he'd get sleepy, he'd pull over at a gas station and wash the car or something and continue driving. And I remember him letting me drive one time in his lap. And I passed somebody and tried to come back into the lane too fast. And I remember him telling me, "You don't wait. You have to wait until you get in front of him to come back over in the lane." But that's one thing, you know, that a lot of people don't realize about people that go around the country. Somebody's got to drive. And he did all the driving. And he knew where to go. And, of course, we got lost a few times. But
yeah.
Especially that time
in San Antonio.
But anyway, we
barely made it back.
We wouldn't have gotten anywhere without him, because he had the sound system, and he knew what the sound system was supposed to do. And
he was head concho. He was the head of everything. We depended on him for everything.
Except you were the most important thing with the singing, because you had the training and the background, and were able to teach us things that there's no way Daddy could have done that.
Glad to talk to him.
Yeah. So that was y'all were equal in the Bell family singers, even though he drove and did all the talking, you did all the teaching. And without either one, we would have been nothing.
Well, that sounds like something. I was wondering why I was left here, though. Do you know why I'm still here?
Well,
to make this tape?
Maybe to make this tape. Maybe to be an example to everyone who comes in contact with you. But it's not for us to figure all that out.
No.
We don't need to understand why you are left behind.
While I'm still here.
Yeah.
And you know, I tried to get strong a week or two ago. I thought, it's been 3 weeks. I'm going to start doing physical therapy. You don't even know this. I can't hardly walk now. I thought I was doing good. I was getting stronger and everything, and my knees are so bad now that it's not good for me to go to town or anywhere. And then I wanted to go off of one of my medications that I had been on for so long, and I didn't know whether it was helping me or not, so I decided to go off of it real slow every other day. And I started it last Friday, I think it was, or Friday week ago. And Sunday, I couldn't go to church. The side effects, I mean, that's not what you call the side effects. The withdrawal was so bad that I couldn't go to church. And so now I've still got the withdrawal because something happened here that I knew that I was still under the withdrawal. I had to take my teeth out. I was gonna bite my tongue and everything else. And so Mary said, when I told her about it, I didn't tell her why I missed church until yesterday. and that was Wednesday, and I told her that it was all my fault, that I had done it to myself, and that she said, well, evidently it was helping you a lot, and that made me feel better. So that's so much of that Glenn Bell.
So we're going to switch gears now, and we're going to talk a little bit about things that we remember about the Bell Family Gospel Centers.
Some things I remember, some things I don't. But on our first record, first LP, I think we sang a song called You Can Lose Your Lonesome Blues. And we sang that in Arkansas for the writer that wrote that song, Curtis Stoss. If you ever see songs written by Curtis Stoss, well, he was really honored that we recorded it. And we went to Arkansas more often than anywhere else. One time we left home and we had a PA system that was in a one-wheel trailer. And when we got to Arkansas, we were in snow. And all that was, there was just one wheel, the trailer wheel that was right down the middle of the other tracks in the snow. And then we went to, this was Arkansas too, also Fort Smith, Arkansas, with the who?
J.C. Taylor and his wife that used to live in Gatesville. And I was in love with Carol, their daughter. So of course, we were only 8 or 9 years old, but we...
were friends.
I bought her an anklet.
Oh, you did?
When they lived in Gatesville. They lived in Gatesville right down the street from Aunt... Anyway, they lived in this little house there, and they moved. I don't know why they moved to Arkansas, but we connected with them again and sang on TV up there. And I think he was probably instrumental in helping us get on TV up there.
We were up there 2 weeks. That was a long time for us to be up there, but we did sing on live TV, and we did programs up there. And what else that was happening in Arkansas? I thought you mentioned
there might have
more.
Been some conventions or something we went to up
well,
there.
Well, we knew the Lindsays up there, and we knew Curtis Stoss. And Junior even remembers that we went to Curtis Stoss' house and the long driveway in the red dirt.
Yeah, it was dirt. Just a long dirt driveway. It looked like a... If you wanted to characterize it, it seemed like the movie Deliverance. You know, it was like the Hicks, the country folks up there. And this is a guy who wrote a song that was published.
He wrote lots of songs. Yeah, he wrote lots of songs.
I remember it was the first time I'd ever seen mountains. I had never seen a mountain before, and I remember driving through those the mountains around there and being above the clouds and looking at clouds that we would drive through and then go up a hill and down a hill, and I remember that distinctly. And I remember holding Carol Taylor's hand once. We went to the store. We were evidently staying with them or something.
Yeah, we were staying with them.
And she and I walked to the store and bought some licorice. And on the way back, I don't know who instigated, but she and I held hands. And it was the only time we had ever held hands. Yeah.
Well, he also had a crush on a girl from Faith Temple in Killeen. We sang a lot with them as they were a choir. And she was a soloist, even though she was a little girl. And her name was Melody. And I see her often in Killeen now. and we usually bump into each other on purpose or do something funny. And there was a lot of songs, a lot of remembrances. Glenda had boyfriends in different towns. Mary had boyfriends in different towns. And it was really getting dangerous for the family out there.
Well, I remember one of Glenda's boyfriends, especially, was the Perkins boy.
Yes.
And we would go out to East Texas, where they live in Jasper, and we would stay with them occasionally, and because we did a lot of singing conventions in East Texas. One family, the Hooks family that we stayed with.
I don't know who they were. I tried to remember their name not long ago. They were so poor.
Yeah.
They were so poor that I don't know, but they took care of us.
Right. And in Louisiana, the Bergeons.
Bergeons. I don't remember that.
Yeah. But Jasper and the Perkins family, which was J.E. Perkins and his wife, and Jimmy was his name, Jimmy Perkins, and Glenda were kind of boyfriend and girlfriend. And I remember us staying at their house several times, and I remember reading the book Tom Sawyer at their house. That's where I first read Tom Sawyer, and it became one of my favorite book. But East Texas was one of the biggest areas that we sang at, you know, Beaumont, Vider, Lufkin, and Jasper were some of the towns that I remember us singing at. And I remember driving through a town called Cut and Shoot.
Yes. That was on the way to Houston.
Was it? Well, there were just a lot of memories about us traveling about. And one of the things that I remember about singing was that we would do this on the weekends.
Mm-hmm.
I guess we'd probably leave on a Saturday, get there for Saturday
Friday.
Night.
No, we'd leave there Fridays. We'd leave Friday. On Fridays.
Okay.
And get somewhere by Saturday.
Okay. And we'd usually be at a singing convention. And that was usually a Saturday night and all day Sunday, wasn't it? And one thing that I remember about me was that when we would come home, we'd drive home Sunday night.
Mm-hmm.
Most all the time.
Because Clayton had to go to work at midnight.
And we all had to go to school, except I sometimes didn't. I didn't want to get up and go to school. I always had used it as an excuse to be sick or not go to school on Mondays. So that's one memory that I have of singing. Sometimes I got to stay home on Mondays.
Oh, and something I remember that I just thought about yesterday or sometime. We do have what do you call them it's not a page, not Facebook, but
we have a website.
Yeah. And people can listen to our radios. Glenda put it on, so I've never seen it. I don't know what's on, but other people have heard it that have called us. And Junior and Mary and Nisha and Nathan are all on Facebook. And
Glenda.
And Glenda, yeah. So I get news that way. Sometimes I get it the next week. But I do get it. They say, well, I talked to Junior so-and-so, so-and-so. Was anything on this morning?
No, there was one thing on Facebook today, and it's just another little ding. evidently Mary is communicating with Gaines Smith.
Yes.
On Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
And Mary and Gaines were an item back in the day whenever we sang, because Gaines and Clyde Smith lived in Gatesville, and we knew their parents. And at some point after Glenda left, Clyde and Gaines sang with us some with Anita Reed, because we didn't have Tiny anymore. We found this girl named Anita Reed, who lived
in Temple.
In Temple, and she was very pretty. And she also sang. And so there were trios and stuff with Mary and Gaines and Clyde, or Mary and me and Clyde, or somebody, you know. But Mary is speaking on Facebook with Clyde Smith. I mean, Gaines.
Gaines Smith. Well, she always loved Gaines, and she went to Sam Houston State College because she knew he was there. But he got married while he was in college, married another girl, broke her heart, broke Mary's heart. So now I don't know whether he's married now or grandpa.
I don't know.
But Mary could probably tell you.
Yeah, he probably knows.
Yeah. And I remembered something a few minutes ago, something that happened that we should talk about, but I've already forgot it. So it'll come up.
Yeah, we'll remember it again later.
Yeah.
But we sang mostly in Texas, Louisiana, Arkansas, and I want to say Oklahoma, but I don't
remember. We had one booking in Oklahoma, and it was Vian, Oklahoma, and there wasn't anybody there. Nobody was there. But sometime we would do a Saturday night concert and then go to church on Sunday morning. We got to there at the last. We wouldn't take a booking on Sunday morning. We wouldn't sing in a church on Sunday morning. We went to church at the Church of Christ. And the Church of Christ had the Bell family that day as visitors. But that's enough of that. I remember that I did get to go to church sometimes. So you say something you remember now. Oh, I got to tell you this. Nisha lives out here. She bought her house. I bought it for Glenda. It's a double wide. And then Nisha bought it from Glenda. Glenda lives in
Las Vegas.
So he's not employed. I don't know what's going to happen there. But Nisha still lives here, and she loves it out here. She wouldn't be anywhere else. So she owns 35 head of goats. I gave her my dogs when I went out of business. She's doing that, and she's going to college, and she is not employed. And she has a boyfriend that lives with her, and he's not employed. So it's pretty raw out here.
Nobody's employed out here.
Kara and Emra.
Kara and Emra are both employed.
Yes.
Yeah, of course, Mary is a retired teacher now.
Yeah.
And so this is the unemployed
Bell Commune.
Land of tranquility.
Yeah, we didn't get to talk about all of that.
Well, we did. We did talk about buying it, and the name of Land of Tranquility was actually Buddy's
Corner.
Buddy's front place, I guess.
Yeah.
So, and he had a sign out there at one time, an arch over the
gate arch over
that
the
said
gate.
Land of Tranquility.
Yes.
Yeah.
Now it has G&G ranch or something like that, estate. But when we moved out here, we had young couples, and now they're grandparents. And they called us Ma and Pa Bell. And they were at Clayton's funeral. And to all of this that I'm talking to, all these I'm talking to, they were at the funeral probably, so they know all about it.
There's one part of y'all's life that we didn't cover, and I'm going to bring it up right now. You might want to talk a little bit about it, and that's whenever y'all decided that you'd move to Longview.
Oh, yeah.
Why don't you go on about that?
Okay.
And just start to just think about maybe why did you go to Longview, and how long were you there, and what did you do, and what happened when you came back?
Okay. The time when we went to Longview, we ran out of money while we were building the house. We liked at least, you know, everything you start to do, you start to build something. Well, it's always doubles almost by the time you get through. But we ran out of money, and we lacked about $7,000, having enough to finish the house. And we were in the middle of it, and we were broke. So Tom Bell, that's Lowell, lived at Longview, and he was in the restaurant business. He sold restaurant supplies, and he was wealthy. And he came down to see us, and he saw our house that Clayton built, and he said, I'd like to hire you to build a huge offices and new restaurant supply house for me. And I don't know how long it was to last, but we moved. He paid our rent, and he paid Clayton $2,000 a month. And I sang at nursing homes and walked miles. And so that's for when you sit down. Just scoot it up. I'm talking to Junior right now. And so in about 6 months, well, we really enjoyed up there too, because we were together. And in about 6 months, we had enough money to come home. And while we were up there, I thought of this last night. I thought, how stupid can you get? We bought a queen-size bed mattress, because we decided we wanted to have a queen-size bed instead of a full-size bed. So we bought a mattress up there in Box Springs for, I think, $400 we paid for it. And we put it in the pickup, bringing it home. And we got home, and it had snowed here, and all the trenches of the water line were full of snow. And it was snowing all the way from Longview here. And we would have to get under underpasses sometime. The snow would be so bad, and it was so cold. But instead of buying the double wide of the queen-size mattress here, we bought it up there and towed it all the way down there. And it got snow on it. We was wondering about how wet it was going to be and everything. But that was one of the funny things. And we went to church at, I can't remember the place. It was a few miles out of Longview. And we made lots of friends up there. Some of them we still have. And that was the story of the Longview Exposition. We were gone about 6 months.
Well, now, had Daddy retired, I guess, then?
Clayton retired at 55.
And so this happened after retirement?
Oh, yeah, this happened. He started the house after he retired. And we were keeping both places. So He retired at 55 instead of waiting till he was 60. So he took a cut in pay. But he was building the house. He was planning the house. All of this was going through his mind, and I didn't even know all of it. I probably could have helped. I did help him do the little jobs, and I planned the kitchen. I planned the cabinets. I turned it over to the cabinet maker. I wanted a 6x12 pantry. I got it. He built everything just like I drew it.
And you needed those countertops lower than most people.
Oh yeah, my cabinets are not as tall as everybody else's. They're 2 inches shorter. And
because you're only 4'11".
Yes, because I'm 4'11". And that's all of that I thought about.